One if by land, two if by sea, three if by government. This is Paul Revere Radio. And now, here's your host, Rick Johnson.
You are listening to Paul Revere Radio, and this is a special edition. You're going to be hearing a recording I did just a few days ago in Kannapolis, North Carolina. The group that hosted this event is We the People North Carolina, and the MC is Ronnie Long, who is the head of this group. Lots of different speakers who come in to speak about the Second Amendment, some of our local congressmen and some state representatives as well. Lots of good information. Please pay special attention to the representative from the Sheriff's Department that speaks. He goes into the sheriff's position. He explains that they are sworn to uphold the Constitution. And then he also gives some additional information after that, which I think you'll find very interesting. So pay very close attention to that. Once again, this group that put this on is We the People North Carolina. I encourage you to look them up online. They are a up-and-coming force in North Carolina to contend with politically. And I appreciate the time that you have taken to participate with Paul Revere Radio, and I hope to see you at our blog, which is paulreveremedia.com. Come in and check us out. You can also find us on Twitter at Paul Revere Media, and just let us know if you think we're doing a good job or not. Okay, here's the presentation. This is the Second Amendment meeting from We the People, North Carolina.
We're glad to have you here tonight. We want to start off with a Pledge of Allegiance to our flag. So if everybody would stand, remove your cover. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. If you would stay standing for our prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we come before you in humbleness tonight and ask for your guidance, your leadership, and your direction. Lord, we face a very troubled time in our nation, and we know that it's because we have turned away from you. Lord, our nation was formed many, many years ago on a Christian foundation, and it was built upon a moral fabric. And Father, that fabric has been torn asunder in so many ways. God, we just ask that you would help each and every one of us to have ears to hear, and eyes to see, and hearts to receive you, because it's only through your grace and your divine guidance and leadership that we're going to be able to overcome the forms of evil that are coming against us at this time. So God, it's in your Son's name, Jesus Christ, that I ask these things. Amen. Please be seated. We have a member from the Cabarrus County Sheriff's Department who is going to speak to us for just a moment, give us a statement from Cabarrus County Sheriff Brad Riley. He could not be here tonight because he is at the National Sheriff's Convention in Washington, D.C. He sends his apologies, but if you would come on up, we will let someone speak on his behalf. This is Paul Hunt, Cabarrus County Sheriff's Department.
Sure is a good turnout tonight. Sheriff Riley sends his regrets. He is up in Washington, D.C. at a sheriff's conference. Actually, this week, I think, the president and several other members are meeting with several sheriffs, police chiefs across the country, discussing what you're wanting to discuss tonight. Just a statement from the sheriff in that, very strong believer in the Second Amendment, as we are in the Constitution itself. It's what this country was founded on. It's what we believe in. And we don't want anybody to take that away from us. Amen. Yeah, that's what we're here for. You know, just your voice is very important. You know, starts here. Have Congressman Hudson here also and several other elected officials. And it's just important for your voice to be heard. I mean, it is a big issue. If it wasn't, I mean, look around you. Just in our small community, it's a big issue. And just so you know, I mean, it is important. The sheriff does believe in the Second Amendment. We still, as law enforcement officers, we have an oath to uphold as far as We have to uphold the law, whatever the law is. We really don't have much choice in that matter. If someone is doing something illegally that they shouldn't be here doing or whatever, we will take care of that also. But just know in your heart, you know, that's our job, is to uphold the Constitution. And nobody's changed it that I know of, and I don't know if anybody's going to change it, not as long as there's a lot of support like this. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
It's good to know that we do have a sheriff that believes in the Second Amendment. A high-profile former sheriff once wrote in a lawsuit, he sued the federal government. His name was Sheriff Richard Mack, former sheriff of Graham County, Arizona. He and Sheriff Jay Prince, who was also sheriff at Ravalli County, Arizona, sued the federal government back a few years ago in regards to enforcement of provisions of the Brady Gun Bill, and he won. And he is one of the forefront leaders of this Second Amendment movement, I guess you would say, that has helped us to realize the power that the sheriff actually has. The sheriff being the highest law enforcement officer in the county. Hear what I said, in the county. He actually overrules the governor. He overrules the folks in Raleigh. He overrules the people in D.C. Now, there's a lot of discussion about that, and people are going to say, that's crazy talk. Well, we have a gentleman here tonight that's going to help us to understand that a little bit better. Sheriff Mack and many others across the country have joined together in something called the Constitutional Sheriffs and Police Officers Organization. And they are standing strong for our Second Amendment rights. They have said in many counties across the nation, and we have, as of yesterday, 7 who have signed on in North Carolina. The closest two are Union County and Iredell County, who have said if a federal officer comes into their county and tries to enforce an unconstitutional law, they will stand in opposition to that for their citizens. Now, folks, there's a lot of sheriffs out there that are on the fence. There's a lot of them that don't understand the power they have. And that's something that we're working hard to help them to be able to bring into focus and to be able to find out about. Through the efforts of We the People NC, we started about a year and a half ago working with the 10th Amendment Center. We have now succeeded in being able to reach our pledge goal of over $6,000 to bring the 10th Amendment Center's Nullification Now Tour to North Carolina. Thank you. That happened about 2 weeks ago. We are now in the process of all of the planning and all of the stuff that's got to go into that. I talked with Bill Kennedy with the Tax Center just this past week, earlier this week actually, and he said they are shooting for sometime in April to be able to bring that event out. So we will let you know as soon as we find out how quickly we'll be able to do that. Now on, I don't know what the date is, the day, the 5th.
Tuesday.
Yeah, the 5th of February in Raleigh, Grassroots North Carolina is having a rally. We encourage everyone that possibly can to please attend that, because at that rally they're going to be talking about our Second Amendment rights and be able to let the message get out to the elected officials there in Raleigh. We have to work at a local level, a grassroots level, here in our county, in our cities, in our region or our districts, and then in our state, to be able to overcome a lot of the pressure that's coming down. A lot of the anti-gun enthusiasts, there is a method behind their madness. And we're here tonight to understand a little bit more about what we have to legally be able to stand against them. Now, We the People is not a rabble-rousing group. We are an educational association. I have been accused of stirring the pot and stirring trouble. Got one of my friends over here laughing at me when I say this, but our intent is to educate the people. We're not here to rally people up to riot, to break out your guns, and go marching in the streets, or anything like that. We firmly support the Second Amendment, the Constitution in every way. In fact, if you'll see our banner over there, our motto or our goal is to educate people, to unite, to protect, preserve, and defend our Constitution in the United States. That's why we exist. And folks, we're going to encourage you a little later on to become involved with We the People here locally and or some of the other Tea Party groups in the area to be able to actually get involved and do some things at the local level that will be able to help to make a difference. Tonight we've got four speakers that hopefully are going to help you better understand a few things. First, we're going to start off with Scott Cumby. He is our constitutional expert. He's going to be laying the groundwork, the foundation for us. He'll be discussing the constitutional republic that we're a part of, the God-given rights we have and are assured through our Constitution and Bill of Rights, and most importantly, our Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. And if you remember, there are four important words in that Second Amendment. Shall not be infringed. We'll find out about that. Following Scott, we'll have our U.S. Senator Richard Hudson will be here talking about what's being done in Raleigh. D.C.
Congressman.
What did I say?
Senator.
Sorry about that, Richard.
I make the motion we move to the bill.
He said he wants to work for a living.
We got people in the House that are working hard. We need to fix the Senate, too. And I'm trying to get him over there quicker, but sorry, Richard. He's going to help us learn a little bit about what's going on in D.C. Then we're going to hear from North Carolina House of Representatives, former Representative Glenn Bradley. He was at the 49th District in the kind of Wake County area, which now because of redistricting, it doesn't exist anymore. But he's going to talk to us about what they did in Raleigh recently and some of the things that they're proposing to do up there and help us to see better what they can do, what we can do to protect our Second Amendment rights. Has Paul Vallone showed up?
Yes,
there he is. He snuck in on me.
I didn't do it, whatever it is.
But you're going to. Paul Vallone will wrap everything up from our professional speaker standpoint. He is with Grassroots North Carolina, and again, they're having their rally coming up on the 5th, and he's going to talk a little bit about that, going to tell us about what Grassroots NC is doing to help protect us and our Second Amendment rights and why we all need to be involved with Grassroots North Carolina, as well as the NRA, Second Amendment Foundation, many other gun rights organizations. And finally, Sharon Mendoza with We the People will be wrapping things up. She will be talking about our organization, We the People, and Watch for the People, and how you all can get involved with us here locally to make a difference. Because politics being local, we have the opportunity to be a lot more effective when we have our city councilmen, our county commissioners, our local representatives right here close at hand. One of our representatives I just seen just ran in, Larry Pittman, 82nd District, House of Representatives from North Carolina. Thank you, Larry, so much for coming in. For y'all that don't know, the House went in session yesterday. Larry's been in Raleigh all day. He's got to be back in Raleigh tomorrow morning for session.
Monday?
They gave? Okay, well, I was making it. Okay, I was making it worse then. But he is running. Has driven back in from Raleigh tonight to be here with us, and we want to thank him so much for that. Larry is a staunch supporter of the Second Amendment and our constitutional rights, and you need to keep an eye on him. He's a rising star here in our area. So, yeah, we mentioned Carl. I saw he had snuck in. Has any other elected officials snuck in on me that I didn't see?
Right.
Yes.
David Black.
David Black?
Yeah, he snuck in.
Where is he at?
I seen him.
Right there. David Black, the 8th District Chair, Republican Party. Thank you for coming, David. Without any further nonsense from me, I'm going to let Scott get started and give us a little bit of an idea of what we are here for. Scott Cumby.
Can everybody hear okay?
Pull it up.
Okay, I am privileged and humbled to be here. Every time I get to speak to a group on our Constitution, on American history, I ask myself, why me? But it is really good to be here tonight, and I appreciate Ronnie having asked me to join you tonight. I got a lot to say in 30 minutes, so I'm gonna hit the ground running. So strap your seatbelts on. We're going to put a lot of quotes up on the screen here. So read as you can. I'm going to try to read these quickly as we go through this. I'd like the founders to speak for themselves. Is really what I'd like to do. So we're going to go through a lot of quotes. I want to start with two questions. Two questions, and this is the interactive part, so I'd love you to answer these questions. The first question is, what rights are granted to us in the First and Second Amendments of the Constitution?
They come from God.
Wow.
It's going to be a short night.
It's going to be a short night. You don't need me. You don't need me. It's amazing. Honestly, that's the first time anybody's answered the question correctly. The answer to the question is none. And what's the key word in that question? The word granted. We're not granted anything in the Constitution. Remember, the Constitution is our compact with the federal government. It's where we delegate power to them. So our rights are not granted to us. The answer to the second question, if the Second Amendment were repealed today, so today, if Congress and the states ratified a repeal of the Second Amendment, what would change constitutionally? Not politically, constitutionally.
Nothing.
The answer to the question is nothing. And so you know that I'm not taking your answers. Those are the answers I had on the board. Okay, we're going to go through that and discuss why that's true tonight. Now, first of all, I'd like to define a couple of terms. We hear a lot of discussion about the political spectrum. And terms are used and definitions are never given. And I'd like to just real quickly talk about the political spectrum. First of all, most of us know what the left is. What the liberals and progressives are. Remember, a rose by any other name is still a rose. The left by any other name is still the left. Okay. We know what the right and the conservatives are. Hopefully that's who we are here tonight. We rarely hear mention of the far left, but when we do, we also often hear the communists and the socialists lumped into that category. The far right or any of us that are openly Christian or are gun nuts. Okay. And we hear about these people all the time. Now, what confuses me is oftentimes the Nazis and the fascists are thrown into that category. And I don't know how they're any different from the communists and socialists is the problem. Okay? And then there's the last category, which are the smartest people on the planet. They're the moderates or centrists, right? Okay? But I cannot figure out who these people are. There's usually only two positions on an issue. You either for higher taxes or you're not. Either for traditional marriage or you're not. Either for freedom or you're not. I don't know what a moderate or centrist position is. So I've had a very difficult time understanding who these people are. So let me graph this out for you. Let's put this political spectrum on a graph here. So at the bottom we have a government. On the left, far left, is 100% government. On the far right is no government. And then the scale, the vertical scale, is freedom. We start at the right. With no government, how much freedom do we actually have? Now, this is just relative. Pick any number here. We're not totally free is the point here. We're not totally free because if there's no government, you spend all your time protecting yourself, your family, and your stuff. So you don't have freedom to go on trips to the mountains or whatever because you can't let your stuff be left alone. You've got to protect you and yourself and your family. So as we add government, though, as we move to the left and add government, what happens to our freedom? It increases up to a point. And then there's a point at which, as you add more government, you lose freedom. And you lose freedom. And where we want to be is at the top of that that pinnacle, the top of that graph there, what I've called here the pinnacle of freedom. That, I believe, is where what our founders created for us in the Constitution. That's what they were trying to create, is a republic where we had just enough government to have the greatest amount of freedom, and to protect our stuff, to protect our rights, as we'll see in just a moment. But what's happened over time is we've moved to the left, and we continue to move to the left every year and every year. And when we talk about the moderates are just not quite as far to the left as the left is. But they're still farther to the left than we are, and then we don't want to be there. I don't think these people are the smart people. The smart people are the people that want to climb that mountain and stand on the pinnacle of freedom, and that's where I want to be. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. So remember, what does the left want to do? They want to control everything you have and everything you do. It's all about power. If you're familiar with Dr. Tim Daughtry and Dr. Gary Castle, and this is out of their book, this is what they say. And that's true. That's what the left wants to do. They want to control everything you have and everything you do. What's Obamacare about? It's about controlling health care. It's controlling everything you have and everything you do. Gun control is not about guns. It's about control. Controlling everything you have and everything you do. And if you remember that, if you remember the political spectrum here, the farther to the left you go, the more control there is and the less freedom there is. And if we move back to that pinnacle of freedom, is more and more freedom. And that's where we want to be. The most important words in our documents, our founding documents, are out of the Declaration of Independence. I want to quickly review these. We hold these truths to be self-evident. Now, first of all, if our founders tried to apply for tenure at a college, they would not be able to get tenure because they actually believed in truth. And it's sad to say that we have forgotten what truth is, and we don't believe in right and wrong anymore. I mean, so many of our people in our country don't. There is no black and white, there's no right and wrong, but there is truth, and our founders believed that there was truth. And they believed it was self-evident. They list four truths in the Declaration of Independence they say are self-evident. In other words, to be self-evident, we don't have to discuss it, we don't have to argue about it, we don't have to debate it. It's self-evident. Everybody with a brain understands that these principles are true, and they are self-evident. And what are those principles? Number one, all men are created equal. And the operative word there is created. We weren't we didn't just come out of nothing. We were created. God, our Heavenly Father, created us and created all of us of equal value and equal worth. Every single one of us have worth in the eyes of God. And not a one of us does not. So that's the first truth. The second one, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. And who is it that gives us our rights? This goes back to the first question. Our rights are not granted to us by government, by the First and Second Amendment. They are given to us by God. And that is so, so important to grasp, that our rights come to us by God. And unalienable, by the way, unalienable, the word alien is something that is foreign to us, something that doesn't belong to us. And to say something is unalienable means it is part of us. It is not foreign to us. It is who we are. It is inherent in our being, the fact that we are created beings. We have these rights that God has given to us. Number three, the purpose of government. And anybody who's an elected official, and our congressman who's here tonight especially, needs to understand the purpose of government is to secure our rights. That to secure these rights that God has given to us, governments are instituted among men. That is the purpose of government, and that's what government needs to be about. Yesterday I was sitting in a restaurant where we had the Senate hearings going on gun control, and I sat there and listened to Lindsey Graham debating on how many bullets were too many. Okay? And I can't understand that. The purpose of Lindsey Graham, of any of those officials in Washington being in office, is to protect those rights, to keep us at that pinnacle of freedom. But instead, it's about control. He is moving us farther to the left by talking about how many bullets are too many. And the fourth, self-evident truth, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it's the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government. What is the greatest threat to the left? And I think it's the freedom. It's those words, those first two truths. All men are created equal. They're endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights. And I'd say in one word, the greatest threat to the left is God. And why is that? The left is all about power and control. Remember, to the left, government is God. Government is our salvation. Government's our provider. Government's our protector. And if there's something greater than government, then that's the threat to the left. And that thing that is greater than government is God. To put it in the words of John Dickinson, you might remember John Dickinson. He was one of those at the Continental Congress that debated the Declaration of Independence. But he was opposed to it. He was opposed to separating from Great Britain, and the day that the vote was taken, he was not there. But he later was involved as a delegate, I think it was from Delaware, at the Constitutional Convention, and he was one of the signers of the Constitution. He said this: "An unalienable right is a right which God gave to you, and which no, and I love the word, no inferior power has a right to take away." Our government, no government in this world, is superior. Everyone is inferior to the God, the Creator, that gave to you and me our rights. Thomas Jefferson put it this way: "Can the liberties of a nation be thought secure if we remove their only firm basis, a conviction in the minds of the people that their liberties are the gift of God, that they are not to be violated but with His wrath? Indeed, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that His justice cannot sleep forever." If our politicians, if our elected officials just understand that when they violate our rights, when they work to take away our rights, they are just stirring up the wrath of God. If they would just grasp that and respect our rights. I don't know if you remember several years ago when Elena Kagan was in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and Tom Coburn was talking to her about the Second Amendment, trying to get her understand from her what her position on the Second Amendment was. And he finally got frustrated with her, and he just asked her, what's your belief on unalienable rights? What do you think the Declaration of Independence says about unalienable rights? And her answer was very telling. In fact, her answer disqualified her, in my opinion, from being a justice on the Supreme Court. She said, "You should not want me to act in any way on the basis of such a belief, on unalienable rights. I think you should want me to act on the basis of law." In other words, what she believes is that government, the Constitution, gives to us our rights. She does not believe those rights belong to us. And at any point in time, in her opinion, the government can take away those rights from us. And that statement, or at that point, every single member of the Senate should have said, "Thank you, Ms. Kagan, for being here with us today. We're finished with you. Mr. President, who's your next candidate?" Every single one of them should have said that. And every single one of them that voted for Elena Kagan needs to be removed from office. And we need to make that happen. And just as a note, the Supreme Court has cited the Declaration of Independence on over 215 occasions to argue a particular interpretation of the Constitution. So the Declaration of Independence is a document that the Supreme Court refers to. So it has a basis in our, it's not just our founding document, it is who we are, it's our philosophy of government. It's that you cannot understand, in my opinion, the Constitution without understanding the Declaration of Independence. In the Declaration there are 27 reasons listed for why we separated from Great Britain. The Constitution addresses every one of those. And I'd love to spend 3 hours here tonight and go through all those, but it addresses every one of those. If you don't understand the Declaration of Independence, you can't understand what the founders were trying to do when they wrote the Constitution. And I asked this question already: what rights are granted to us in the First and Second Amendments? None, of course. Our rights are granted to us, are given to us by God. The Ninth Amendment was written to protect that very thing. "The enumeration of the Constitution, or the listing in the Constitution of certain rights, shall not be construed to deny or disparage other rights retained by the people." In other words, just because the Constitution doesn't list a right doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So the point here being that the Constitution protects what is already ours. It doesn't grant to us anything. "The purpose of a Constitution," and remember, this is something I always try to drill home to people. The purpose of a Constitution is, first of all, to create a government. Secondly, to define and limit its powers. The Constitution is not a document of unlimited powers. The General Welfare Clause is not a clause of unlimited power. As Madison, I think it was, said that the General Welfare Clause needs to be understood in light of the specific. So the Constitution is not one of unlimited powers. The Constitution, a Constitution, defines the powers of our government and its limits. And the 10th Amendment underscores that. The powers not delegated or not given to the United States by we the people, by the Constitution, are prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states and the respectively, or to the people. So in other words, the power we have not given to the federal government belongs to us or to our state, the state of North Carolina. It does not belong to the federal government. Anytime the federal government steps beyond those limited enumerated powers, it is grabbing power, and that is called tyranny. Anytime that happens. What was the number one argument against ratification of the Constitution? Anybody know the number one argument against ratification of the Constitution? Fear we get too big? Actually, I think there was one other. We could argue. There was no Bill of Rights. And it ties into that very thing. There's no Bill of Rights. There was no definition of what our rights were in the Constitution. Now, what was the number one argument against the Bill of Rights?
If you create a Bill of Rights, you can take them away.
That's a true statement. The argument against was it wasn't necessary. But as actually the letter from Danbury, Connecticut, Thomas Jefferson dealt with that very thing. If it's listed in the Constitution, it suggests that you can take it away. But the number one argument against the Bill of Rights was it's not necessary. Because nowhere in the Constitution does the federal government have any power to take away our right to free speech, our right to freedom of religion, our right to bear arms. So the point here that I want you to grasp is the second question that I asked. If the Second Amendment were repealed today, what would change constitutionally? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Nowhere in the Constitution is the federal government given any power to take our guns, to take our ammunition, to limit the size of our magazines. That power does not exist in the federal government. Every single person on that Senate committee yesterday should have just stood up and said, this is not our role. This is not the purpose of the federal government. They have no power to do what they're doing. And if they pass any bill, it is tyranny. James Wilson was one of six people that signed both the Declaration and the Constitution. He was also one of the original Supreme Court justices. And he said this, our documents, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, were to acquire a new security for the possession or the recovery of those rights to which we were previously entitled. In other words, our rights were previously given to us by God. And our Declaration of Independence, our Constitution, was to secure the possession of those rights, to secure our rights, as the Declaration of Independence says, which we were previously entitled by the immediate gift or by the unerring law of an all-wise and all-beneficent Creator. Every government which has not this in view as its principal object is not a government of the legitimate kind. In other words, if a government doesn't view its role, its number one purpose is securing the rights of the people, then it is an illegitimate government. Now, remember, this is James Wilson, signer of the Declaration, signer of the Constitution, and one of the first Supreme Court justices nominated by George Washington. Adams says, rights are antecedent to all earthly government. Rights cannot be repealed or restrained by human laws. Rights are derived from the great legislator of the universe. Again, a reference to God giving us our rights. Thomas Jefferson, government is to declare and enforce only our natural rights and duties and to take none of them from us. How did the founders view the Second Amendment? So I've talked really generically about rights, but let's look at what the founders had to say about the Second Amendment specifically. Now this is back to James Wilson again. James Wilson said, now I love the word he uses here, homicide. One person killing another. Homicide is enjoined or required when it is necessary for the defense of one's person or house. It is the great natural law of self-preservation, which, as we have seen, cannot be repealed or superseded or suspended by any human institution. So our right to self-preservation cannot be superseded by anyone, by any human institution, in other words, by government. This law, however, is expressly recognized in the Constitution of Pennsylvania. The right of the citizens to bear arms in the defense of themselves shall not be questioned. Now, the wording of that should sound very similar to our Second Amendment. You'll find with many of the state constitutions of the 13 colonies, the wording of a lot of the things in those constitutions is very similar to our Constitution. So if you look to the Pennsylvania Constitution, you can see very clearly here it referenced the right of us, the people, to bear arms. It had nothing to do with a militia or an organized army of any sort. It was a right of the people to keep and bear arms. That was the view of our founders. Going on, George Tucker. Now, George Tucker, if you know, familiar with William Blackstone, he wrote commentaries on British English law. I forget the title of the book. But he was one of those scholars, one of those people that that our founders used for almost, well, through their lives and well up into the 20th century. Blackstone's commentaries on law was the legal reference for a long period of time. George Tucker wrote an annotated version of Blackstone's commentaries where he footnoted and put in all sorts of references and things throughout his commentaries. And he lived during the time of our founders, and he said this: "The right of self-defense is the first law of nature. In most governments, it has been the study of rulers to confine this right within the narrowest limits possible." Now think here, how many bullets are too many? Okay? Defining the limits, the narrowest limits possible. Wherever the right of the people to keep and bear arms is, under any color or pretext whatsoever, prohibited, liberty, if not already annihilated, is on the brink of destruction. Now, isn't that true? Our senators talking about limiting our rights is exactly what George Tucker is talking about here. It's exactly what he's talking about here. And George Tucker continues, "In the Second Amendment, it is declared that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. This prohibition is general. No clause in the Constitution could, by any rule of construction, be conceived to give the Congress a power to disarm the people." And this goes to the heart of that second question I ask. If you take away the Second Amendment, if you repeal it, it doesn't change anything. Because there is nothing, what he says here, no clause in the Constitution could be conceived to give the Congress a power to disarm the people. James Madison, "The advantage of being armed is an advantage which the Americans possess over the people of almost every other nation. In the several kingdoms of Europe, the governments are afraid to trust the people with arms." That is exactly what's going on in Washington. They are afraid to trust us with our arms. They call us nutcases, and they call us all sorts of names. They call us freaks because they're afraid of us. Yes. Yeah, let me clarify. You know, my point is that if you repeal the amendment, it doesn't change anything because the federal government has no power to take our to affect our arms in any way. But aren't we grateful that our founders did list our rights, did write the Bill of Rights, and did pass it for us? Because it does give teeth, exactly what he said, to our rights to self-preservation. Am I running out of time? Okay, let me finish up. A couple more quotes, then we'll be done. "Before a standing army can rule, the people must be disarmed, as they are in almost every kingdom in Europe. The supreme power in America cannot enforce unjust laws by the sword, because the whole body of the people are armed." That's Noah Webster. He was one of our founders. He was one of the ones that was involved in writing the Section 8 of Article 1 in the Constitution. And, of course, he's the Noah Webster of Webster's Dictionary. George Washington, "A free people ought to be armed. No man shall scruple or hesitate a moment to use arms in defense." And let me, last couple of quotes here. John Jay, the first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, said, "Every member of the state," that's referring to us, "ought diligently to read and study the Constitution of his country and teach the rising generation to be free. Teach them how to get back to that pinnacle of freedom that I drew out. By knowing their rights, they will sooner perceive when they are violated and thus be better prepared to defend and assert them." And isn't that what's happening today? People don't know we're losing our rights. People don't know we're losing our freedom. Okay? That's what's happening. They don't understand that our freedoms are vastly, quickly evaporating. And last couple of thoughts here. James Garfield, one of the presidents after the Civil War, late 1800s, he said, Now, and he was a pastor, by the way, before he became president. Now more than ever before, the people are responsible for the character of their Congress. It is our responsibility what the character of Congress is. If that body be ignorant, reckless, and corrupt, it is because the people tolerate ignorance, recklessness, and corruption. In other words, it's our fault, folks. If it be intelligent, brave, and pure, it is because the people demand these high qualities to represent them in the national legislature. If the next centennial, and again, he's about 1870-something, so he's talking to the next centennial, so after 1970. If the next centennial does not find us a great nation, it will be because those who represent the enterprise, business people, the culture, and the morality of the nation, our pastors, our churches, do not aid in controlling the political forces. How many pastors do you know that are standing up and speaking out?
Zero.
We need more of them. It's not zero. It's not zero, but there's not enough of them. And that's the end. So, folks, I appreciate you letting me hear tonight. A couple of them. Couple of items. Heritage Foundation provided some U.S. constitutions. We also have some North Carolina constitutions. They're over here on the table. And then last is some information about the North Carolina Institute for Constitutional Law if you'd like to learn about some constitutional education. So again, thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott. We appreciate you being here tonight and laying the groundwork and the foundation for us. Folks, there's one thing that I've repeated many times in many of the meetings that I've had with our group of We the People, and it's something that I think we need to hear right now. Politics used to be a spectator sport. It used to be something that we'd go vote once every 4 years, we'd pull a little lever and say, okay, did my job, you guys go do your job now. And you know what? That's why we're here. Because they went and did what they wanted to. Folks, politics can no longer be a spectator sport. It has to be a full contact sport from this time forward. Now, am I talking about violence? Nope. But Buddy Rowe, can I ever work that computer? Can I get the emails out, the Facebook? How many of you are here tonight because you found out about this on Facebook? We can get the message out. Fax, phone, Facebook, email, calling and going and see your representatives. That's what politics is going to have to be from now on. We can't sit back and let it happen because that's what got us in the mess we're in now. Okay, I woke up several years ago and looked around and shook my head and said, oh my God, what has happened? I started listening to Rush Limbaugh, and Lord have mercy, my poor steering wheel's got a permanent dent in it. Driving down the road, beating on that steering wheel, yelling at the radio. Well, God bless her, my wife introduced me to Fox News a few years back. And then after a little while, she said, honey, we need to talk. You know, when those kind of conversations start, you're in trouble. I said, what? She said, you're scaring the grandkids. I said, what are you talking about? What do I do? She said, when Fox News comes on and you start yelling at the TV, they don't know what's going on. Folks, it's time for us to get involved. We have got to put politics as a major part of our lives now. We can no longer sit back and let it happen. We, as you just found out, are the ones that are in control. The power that the federal government and the state government has is loaned to it from us.
That's right.
Okay? And guess what? Usins have done a pretty poor job of taking care of things.
That's right.
And it's time for usins to get out there. I got a friend from up north, so that's where I picked that one up. It's time for us to get out there and start doing something. We have to start getting involved. We have to be able to take the phone and call this man and say, hey, like what you did, don't like what you did. That's what he's there for. He's there to hear from each one of us. And if he doesn't know what we think, then he's running blind. How can we expect him to go up and make our decisions if we don't make our decisions known to him?
That's right.
There's a young lady and a gentleman here from his office that's going to pass out some information. If y'all will go ahead and start passing it out. This will give you a little bit of an idea of where Richard Hudson stands on some things that you can take home and look it over. But right now, we're going to have Richard stand up and give us a little bit of insight of what's going on from his standpoint out of D.C.
Thank you so much. I tell you what, I'm excited about the size of this crowd. You know, I came in, Ronnie said, Richard, thank you for being here, and said, you know, I appreciate the way you've been voting. I gave you a hard time during your campaign, and I said, well, keep giving me a hard time. If you don't like what I'm doing, give me a hard time, because that, I work for every one of you. You know, you're the boss, and you employ me, and the next 2 years, I'm going to represent you the best I can, and I'm going to always vote my conscience and do what I think's right. I told you when I was campaigning that you may not always agree with me, but you're always going to know where I stand. And so let me just start out by making real clear where I stand. Mm-hmm. I will not support any new gun law proposed in Congress, period. There's two reasons. Number one is on January 3rd, I swore an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. And the oath wasn't to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution when it's convenient, right? It wasn't to do that when it's easy or when it serves my purpose. It's to defend the Constitution, period. And we have a right under the Second Amendment to keep and bear arms, and I'm just not going to support anything that infringes on that. But the second reason I'm not going to support any of these proposals I've seen from Senator Feinstein or anybody else is because it's bad public policy. Why would you pass laws you know don't work? I mean, never mind the fact that it is a violation of our rights, but why have public policy that doesn't work? We know for a fact that these proposals don't work. You look at...
Well, they used to work in California.
That's right. But you look at the assault weapons ban last time. You know, I heard someone talking on TV once about how they put together the assault weapons ban legislation last time. You know, they literally went through magazines and looked at pictures and circled pictures of guns they thought looked scary.
Yep. That's right.
I'm not making that up. That's how they chose what an assault weapon was. During the assault weapons period, when it was in place, we had 19 or 14 school shootings, including Columbine. And since the assault weapons ban went out in 2004, we've seen a decline in gun violence. In fact, today we're at a 40-year low in gun violence and violent crime. There's absolutely no correlation between banning scary guns and gun violence. You know, if you look at this piece of paper, I wrote a letter to the president and got the other freshman from North Carolina to sign it. I'm still waiting for a reply.
Don't hold your breath.
Oop.
Think we're a little walk.
A little too much volume here. All right. Everybody hear me still?
Yes.
And what I said in the letter, and what I've said vocally on CNN with Candy Crawley, and I've said on national radio, and I've said over and over to the media, mm-hmm. is that we all watched in horror what happened in Newtown. My wife, who I forgot to introduce when I started, Renee, my beautiful wife, say hello to everybody. I can still remember, we stopped what we were doing. We stopped everything we were doing that day and watched TV and just were sick on our stomach trying to imagine the horror those parents were going through and how any human being could do that to those babies. It's horrible. Horrible. And I understand why there are some people who don't know better might think, it's reasonable to ban scary guns, or why can't we just limit the number of bullets that person had, or why can't we do something to stop this violence? And I even agree with what President Obama said right after the aftermath when he said we need to have a national dialogue to look at the causes of this violence. We need to make sure it never happens again. Amen. But we're still waiting for that national dialogue. Because if we want to truly stop this violence, we've got to look at what the causes are. And Ronnie, I appreciate the way you started this meeting because that has a big clue to what part of our problem is. You know, these kids who took these guns and shot other kids are broken human beings. They're hurting. They don't realize they're children of God. They don't realize how loved they are. That's a big part of it. But there's also the issue of mental health and how we're dealing with mental health in our society. I mean, we lump together people with developmental disabilities, people with alcoholism, people with schizophrenia. We lump them all together and call it mental health. And they're all very different, and they all need very different prescriptions. That's a big problem. You look at the state, thank goodness we got people like Larry Pittman and Carl Ford representing us in Raleigh. But the last administration decided we were going to decentralize mental health. We're going to close down these institutional hospitals, and we're going to have community mental health. So they closed them down. They forgot to build the infrastructure in the community to take care of the people. So we have folks that don't have anywhere to go. They're going to homeless shelters and emergency rooms. We need to look at this. We need to look at the fact that almost every one of these shooters, maybe all of them, were taking behavioral drugs. No one's looked at the link and the causality of that. We need to be looking at these issues. Sorry, I'm getting hoarse. I had 9 town hall meetings with farmers in the last 3 days, and I've been talking to them traveling the district. But we need to take a serious look at this. We need to have a national dialogue to talk about these things. Let's talk about the kind of intervention programs we've got for students who are so lonely, that become so isolated. We need to do a better job of identifying these young people and trying to have some kind of intervention. These are the causes of this violence. It's not the weapon. There's not one proposal Dianne Feinstein has put forward that would have stopped the shooting in Connecticut.
That's right.
You know, and the assault weapons ban last time, they listed these characteristics that a scary weapon has that makes it an assault weapon. And they said it has to have two of these characteristics to be banned. Well, now her new law says it's got to have one of these.
I wish those teachers would have had an assault weapon to defend her and those kids.
Absolutely. But thank goodness Dianne Feinstein is going to stop the onslaught of crimes committed with a bayonet. Because that's one of the characteristics. If a rifle has a bayonet, it's an assault weapon. Man.
So my black powder muzzle loader is an assault weapon.
Absolutely. So I'm not going to labor the point too much more, but the point is we do need to stop this violence. We do need to look at what's really causing this violence. And unfortunately, there are opportunistic politicians who have an agenda to ban guns who are taking advantage of this situation and are preventing that dialogue. And so I'm going to continue to push for that dialogue, and I'm going to continue to fight against this. And one of the ways where I can do that is to be very vocal. You know, I was sworn in on the 3rd. That was a Thursday. On Sunday, I was on CNN talking about the Second Amendment. And you know how I knew I did a pretty good job? Well, my mother, who's in the back, said I did. Thanks, Mom. But also, y'all ever heard of John Stewart, the comedian?
Oh, yeah.
He took the clip of me talking about our right to keep and bear arms, put it on The Daily Show, and made fun of me for about 3 minutes.
The only time I've ever watched
it was awesome. I've been a congressman 5 days, and John Stewart made fun of me. I mean, I'm on the right track. But I'm going to continue to be very vocal because there's a lot of members of Congress and people in the Senate who've been very cautious about this. You've seen their comments in the media. You know, we need balance. We need to take a look.
We need a balanced budget.
So what I'm trying to do is be bold and be clear and help them see the way and show them that it's okay, that you can get out here and talk about our rights and it'll be okay. And you've got good reporters like the folks here from the Independent Tribune who will write what you said, and the people will read it, and the sun will come up the next day. And so I'm encouraging my colleagues, and that's why we did this letter to the president. You know, we just wanted to lay down a marker and show them where we stand. And so all the freshman members from North Carolina, we signed the letter. Don't expect a response. But we need to continue to do this. And I tell you what's really important. All of you being here tonight is critical. This is such a tremendous statement that we the people are going to stand for the Constitution. But don't stop here. Don't make this be the end of your involvement. Get involved with groups like Grassroots North Carolina and We the People, and come to the Republican Party. Go to these rallies when people are rallying for the Second Amendment, because when they see you there standing up for your rights and the media reports how many people are there, it sends a statement. And it sends a statement to other politicians. Okay, and it gives them the courage to stand for what they know they need to stand for. And so we can help them. And we don't need to deride them. We just need to encourage them. And we need to let them know that we're standing with them if they will stand with us. And I think that's important. And so stay involved. Get involved. Contact my office. Contact your senators. We need to know where they stand on this. We need to absolutely know where they stand, and they need to know where you stand. So write letters. I'm happy for you to write me, too. I've written a letter to respond to people who write on this issue. And someone put it on Facebook and said, I hope he really means what's said here. I'm sure some staffer wrote it, and he probably sends this form letter to everybody. So I replied, because I do most of my Facebook myself, and I said, well, that letter is the letter I send to everyone, that my staff sends to everyone who writes me on the Second Amendment, but I wrote that letter. I mean everything that was in it. So I look forward to hearing from you. And not just when you agree with me. I want to hear from you when you disagree, because I'm always open to a better argument, and you're always going to know where I stand. And so let's have a dialogue about it. I welcome you to be in touch with me. I've been in office less than a month, and I've already done two tours of the district. I've done an event in every county twice. I met with the Chamber of Commerce and business leaders once, and I met with the agriculture community this week. And I'm going to continue to do that. We're going to have town hall meetings. I'm going to have office hours. Because if I'm not accessible, if I'm not looking you in the eye and telling you where I stand and looking you in the eye and hearing you tell me what concerns you, then I can't represent you. And so I'm going to do my best to be involved. And I just ask you to be engaged with me. And I'm going to just do the best I can. And as long as my wife says I'm doing a good job and my mom says I'm doing a good job, I'm going to keep doing a good job. But I really can't tell you how appreciative I am of you showing up tonight, of Ronnie putting this together. We got a real fight on our hands. And thank you for the presentation, spelling out exactly what's at stake. They're not going to stop here. They're coming after us on the gun issue. They're going to come after us. They've already gotten the health care issue to the point where we're going to have to fight tooth and nail to pull it back. But I'm not going to stop until we do. But they're going to continue to try and chip away at our rights to consolidate power. You put it so well. It's about power. And we've got to fight to keep that power, the power that God granted us. And so keep fighting, and I'll keep fighting with you. Thank you so much. I wasn't sure if I was taking questions now or later, but Ronnie said we can do some now, so I'm happy.
I'm going to give about 5 minutes for Q&A, so if you would, one per person and keep it short.
Yes, yeah, so you already spoke briefly on the mental health issue. You have a lot of veterans now who are coming back, and even without asking, they're being classified as PTSD. Do you see that as being one of those things they lump in? And who decides what's mental health? You know, conservatives could be mentally ill and be disqualified from carrying firearms.
Right. Well, I don't think we need any new laws regarding mental health. And, you know, I share your concern about that. I mean, you know, if we give the government the power to block people from getting guns who have a mental health issue, then like you say, who's determining how they're going to define mental health? They might say, coming here and speaking to you guys, I have a mental health problem. And, that's why we can't give an inch on this. That's why we can't give them the power to decide this. Here, and then we'll go back here.
Are you going to run against Hagan in 2 years?
No. No.
We
but,
need you.
No, I appreciate that, but I like what I'm doing right now. We'll see. I'm not going to run for Senate, but thank you. Here and then back here. I feel pretty good that we're not going to see anything in the House. My concern is what's going to happen in the Senate. You know, they had a hearing today, and they're clearly, you know, they've got more votes that are going to push this thing, I think, than we do in the House. If the Senate moves a bill, then we, you know, we're going to be a lot of pressure to bring it up in the House. I personally would do everything I can to make sure it doesn't see the light of day in the House. I feel pretty good about our numbers in the House, but we haven't done any kind of a vote count or I don't know for sure where we stand. That's why I don't feel comfortable enough telling y'all to, you know, go home, everything will be all right. I mean, I think we need to fight it, and I think we need to be vocal. I think we need to continue to attend rallies and do what we can to voice it. You know, I'm going to rest assured I'm going to continue to talk to my colleagues. I feel pretty good about it, but I thought Mitt Romney's going to be president, too. So, all right, right here. Absolutely, and I've talked about this. Like I said, we did stop in every county in our district, and I've mentioned the violence every time until this one, and I should have, as one of the factors. I mean, you look at the glorification of violence in TV and movies and these video games these kids are playing today. It's unbelievable. Take a look at and that's not to say every child who plays a violent video game is going to go commit a crime, but there is some correlation there. And there are people who are more susceptible to that than others. And, it's definitely an influence. And this culture, and what about the fact that that every time we have a shooting, the media glorifies the shooter? I mean, how many times do you see the face and the name of the shooter? I mean, and so if you're a lonely person and who's broken and wants some notoriety, I mean, look at what happened to the other people who did this. I mean, I'm not saying that people are going to go commit the crime because of the media, but this is all part of the mix of things we need to be thinking about and looking at. Absolutely. Thank you for bringing that up. I apologize. Go here and here.
Last question. Shut down the production of ammunition. Is there anything that you can do in the Congress to stifle those agencies to become domestic terrorists?
Well, I want to, Michael, let's talk to him specifically about that. I want to get some more information about what specifically you're talking about, because I'm completely opposed to that. In fact, I'm disgusted by these mayors like Rahm Emanuel and the guy in L.A. who are writing letters threatening our gun, the banks who have credit for our gun manufacturers. And I had we've got good reporters here at the Independent Tribune, but I had a reporter at another place in the district who was asking me, the basic tone of it was, I won't editorialize, but he said, what are we going to do about getting bullets out of the hands of criminals? He said, do you support a criminal background check for bullets? I said, Paul, if a criminal background check worked, the criminal wouldn't have the gun. You wouldn't have to worry about the bullets. Right? And then he had a follow-up. He told me that there was a horrible shooting. These gang members shot a woman, and they traced the bullets back to a Walmart. And he told me this story. It's terrible. And he said, Congressman, what do you propose to keep bullets out of the hands of criminals? And I said, put them in jail. Right? They're criminals. Put them in jail. We have laws to put them in jail. Use them. So Ronnie's yanking on me. I'm happy to stand up here and answer any questions anybody wants.
Come on. Brooke, go ahead. One last question.
Hi, Congressman.
Hi there.
You're on the Homeland Security Committee. Can you answer any questions that we might have about the rumors that the ammunition has been bought up by the Homeland Security DHS?
I don't have an answer yet, but I'm asking questions, and I'll let you know. That's deeply concerning to me. Deeply concerning. We need to find out if that's true, why that's happening. And yeah.
Because the government is paying for it from the United States.
Yeah. I'm absolutely looking into that. Very concerning. Thanks for bringing it up. For those of you in here, she asked about the Department of Homeland Security buying bullets, buying and stockpiling bullets. That's something we're looking into. It troubles me.
You put your hand on the Bible when you're showing it, right?
Yes, sir.
To defend our Constitution. So what was Obama swearing?
That's a good question. I don't know. But, you know, the problem is the president sees the Constitution as a living, breathing document. And I think that's absurd. I think that's absurd. It's just a different point of view. I'd stay here all night, Ronnie, but I know you got some other speakers. I'm happy to stand here and answer any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Folks, I'm sorry to have to cut your questions short, but for us to get the things in that we'd like to tonight and then be able to finish this, I wanted to keep it short. We will have the opportunity for question and answers, as Richard said, later on, so if you need to talk with him, feel free to. We are very fortunate that we have a representative's office this close to us. If you're not aware, Representative Hudson has an office on McGill Avenue in Concord at the Gibson Mill location. It used to be Larry Kissel's office, and we replaced him.
Aww.
So he's same location, but a different face. All right, next we're going to hear from former House Representative Glenn Bradley. He's going to talk to us a little bit about what's going on in Raleigh. We're trying to bring this all back down to home plate here, folks, so that we know what's going on, what we can do about it, where we can get involved, and how we can make the most of our efforts. So, Glenn,
sir,
come on up.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. As Ron said, my name is Glenn Bradley. I served in the North Carolina State House from 2011 to 2012. I lost my job due to redistricting the 9th of this month. We had a big rally out on Halifax Mall. I hope some of you are able to attend. I'd like to talk today about the right to keep and bear arms and what we've been doing and what we are continuing to do at the state level in North Carolina to preserve that, and also what we can do to help preserve that going forward. We had a lot of good news in 2011, which we probably didn't expect. We actually passed Castle Doctrine for the first time in North Carolina, and you can protect your home. That was House Bill 650. We finally have a real Castle Doctrine in North Carolina. The problem with Castle Doctrine, the problem with House Bill 650, the Omnibus Gun Rights Bill, is that it left out a lot of very important things, such as restaurant carry for concealed carry permit holders. Also, for being able to keep the weapon in your vehicle while you go and drop your child off at school. These are some issues that we have to deal with. If you're someone who concealed carries or carries a weapon in the course of your daily life, then you have to break the law and become a criminal just to drop your kid off at school or pick them up. Now, we do have a couple bills already have been introduced, House Bill 17 and House Bill 49. House Bill 17 addresses restaurant carry, and House Bill 49 addresses carry in a vehicle in a lockbox, both of which have already been sponsored by my good friend Larry Pittman. And I want you to keep an eye on him, as well as Michael Speciale. Those are two strong Second Amendment supporters, right to keep and bear arms supporters, that are in the General Assembly now. Now, these bills will help expand and take care of the issues that we didn't deal with in House Bill 650, but I want everyone here to pay close attention, to keep an eye on what's going on. You see, we have Republican supermajorities in the House, in the Senate, and Republican governor. You would think, right off the top of your head, that this should be a no-brainer. We're going to expand our right to keep and bear arms. Unfortunately, some of the enemies to the right to bear arms are in our own party, in the leadership of our own party. And that's something that we have to pay attention to. We have to stay on them. We have to hold their feet to the fire and let them know that we absolutely care about the right to bear arms. Now, let's get some background here. As you know, if you look at the United States Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Second Amendment, it says the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. There's no caveats. There's no questions. That means the federal government does not even have a right to regulate firearms at all. None. When we talk about common sense regulation, let's not talk about keeping the status quo. There's too many conservatives nowadays that want to conserve the status quo instead of going back to the Constitution that made America free. And that's absolutely critical. We have to go back to the right to bear arms. We have to get rid of the regulation at the federal level. And even at the state level, the Constitution only allows the General Assembly to regulate concealed carry. Something I may disagree with, but that's in the state constitution. The state constitution does not allow you to regulate open carry or the regular right to keep and bear arms. So they're not allowed to regulate your gun rights at the state level or at the federal level, and yet they do. Common sense gun regulation. We have to, you know, keep the people safe, the children safe. They're safer with an armed society. That's absolutely true. Now, as we go forward, I'm glad to see so many people out here today. This really does my heart good to see so many people absolutely concerned about the right to keep and bear arms. The more you pay attention, the more you get involved, and the more you press your elected representatives, the more they're going to pay attention to you. Now, I want to set some of your minds at ease. I don't want to have you drop out or think it's not as important. I do not see gun confiscations happening. I don't see it happening by executive order. I don't see it happening by bill. First of all, they won't be able to pass it through Congress. I believe that the White House is stirring that pot on purpose to build up all this fear about what's going to happen. And then as soon as we're distracted and looking somewhere else, somewhere in the dead of the night, midnight, when no one's paying attention, they're going to pass some lesser bill, such as the original Clinton assault weapons ban, and hope everyone just breathes a sigh of relief and moves on. Well, we can't let that happen. We have to stay engaged. So, last session, we had some amazing progress with House Bill 650 to expand our gun rights. We have Real Castle Doctrine. This year, we have House Bill 17 for restaurant carry and House Bill 49 so far for carry in your vehicle. But we have a lot more to do because the federal government is getting bigger every year. And while they don't have the power or the ability to do anything major right now, we don't know what's going to happen 2 years from now, 4 years from now, 10 years from now. I suspect 2014 is going to be a very good Republican year.